Namaste. So life is about love, right? The problem is that for the ego, love is always tragic. In fact, you could say that every form of suffering is a form of bhakti. Our neurotic suffering is always about devotion that leads to pain. In fact, one of the great thinkers of the 20th century who has explored the unconscious mind of human beings, I think, more profoundly than anyone in history, a French theorist named Jacques Lacan, he, toward the end of his life, he made a very important pun. In French, the word symptom, symptôme, is the equivalent of symptôme, meaning Saint Tom, Saint Thomas Aquinas. And he said that every symptom is our attempt at sainthood. We are suffering for love, a love that cannot be consummated at the level of the heart as long as we are in ego consciousness. And he said this is because of what St. Thomas Aquinas actually discovered, that the universe, the world, is a copy of a copy of a copy. It's a replica, a simulacra, to use modern terminology, that ultimately goes back to the archetype of the divine male and female, Sita Ram, Shiva Shakti, all of the archetypes of the great religious traditions. But that these archetypal powers of love cannot be actualized at the level of the ego. And this is because the ego mind is split. And so what we must do, like Aquinas suggested, is go beyond the world and the expressions of God that are copies of the divine and reach the original. And in that there is freedom and there is liberation from the symptoms of suffering, from being cut off from the other. You know, in every culture I've ever encountered, there is a saying that is almost equivalent in each one, which is that every individual is a whole world, right? And each of us indeed is a world of our own projection. And within the ego, we do not actually touch anyone else's world. We think we do, but we are actually simply projecting our world onto the other. We're bringing them in as a character within a script and a matrix, but not seeing the other as they are, or realizing that they are, in fact, indeed in another world. And so we believe we have contact with another person, but we don't. We only have contact with the projection that we superimpose on them, and we remain within our little bubble world, and they within theirs, and we pretend there is contact, but there really isn't. And until the moment when the other doesn't act according to the projection, and then you're furious and it's all over, you see. And the bubbles pop and you realize there was never a connection anyway. There was only a wish for one. And so this creates these symptoms of suffering. What Lacan found is that the reason is that we have split mind. The mind, our conscious mind, indeed desires the heart connection and the fullness of love. But the unconscious mind actually desires something else that's very different. And for these two objects of desire, he created two different terminologies. One is for the object, the big A, autre, other in French is with an A. And on the unconscious level is the objet petit A, the small A, autre, the object that causes our desire, It isn't what we desire, but it's what causes us to desire. And it unerringly chooses a desire that is impossible to fulfill. We will choose an object that cannot be reached, even though our words, our eye of the statement, desires to have that completion. And yet, the unconscious mind wants to continue desiring the impossible. It doesn't actually want to consummate the desire and have the union. It wants to maintain the separation. But to go like the gerbil in the cage, going round and round, seeking this impossible object. But the conscious mind cannot understand it and cannot get out of this trap. To get out of the trap, we have to, like St. Thomas, get out of the state of being a replica of our real self, which is what the ego is. It's a simulacrum. It's not the true self. And the ego's desire, the object that later causes desire, is an original relationship we had with a mother who was weaning us, abandoning us emotionally, separating from us. And we want to have a union with that impossible lost object. Now, it may be then that what we are desiring is a person later on who will reject us, who will leave us, who will frustrate us, who will abandon us, who won't be there for us. Or perhaps we have identified with the father who seemed all-powerful in that situation, and then we want someone to be a slave to us to make us feel all-powerful. Or we want to be enslaved to the other to feel that then we will be accepted. But in any of the permutations that the ego may create, and there are an infinite number of them, one will never have the union that one wants. One will always have a situation of conflict, always a situation of struggle, even though love is what we all really want. But the symptom is a love that is behind a glass that can never be reached. And as long as we are in the ego consciousness, we are doomed to that kind of dissatisfaction. And that's why Buddha said to those three women, you remember who came in front of him, who were named desire, satisfaction, and regret? He said, no thanks. I'll give up that desire because I know that underneath the object of desire is this object A that actually desires the regret, that realizes the impossibility of connection and the level of the ego with the other. The connection can only happen at the level of the divine, where we are already one. And once we realize that we are already one with all that is, because we are light, we are love itself, we are pure awareness that is the very essence and substance of the universe in all of its forms, then there is love that is without desire, and therefore without that ultimate remorse of dissatisfaction. And the love that we want at the level of the ego always leads to buyer's remorse. Because what we wanted is not what we actually bought. And because the ego cannot want the fulfillment of even its heart's deepest yearning, because to fulfill that yearning means that the ego must die in that very act. Okay? The ego, to maintain its own pattern in being, must frustrate itself. For the moth to actually dive into the flame and dissolve, it's the end of the moth. So most moths circle around it. They get burned a little bit, but then they go back. You know, it's a rare moth who will finally dive all the way in. And then there is love. But there is love not coming from any object of desire. The love comes from diving into the flame itself, the real, not the imaginary projection. And it can't come from another human being. It can only come from the ultimate source. Oh, that is the true essence of what all is. If we try to find a copy of that or a manifestation of that within human form, then we are always going to be frustrated. But once the desire has been completed. Once we have made a heart connection internally, because most people aren't connected to their own heart. They want to be connected to someone else instead of being connected internally. Once we do that first, then desire for the other falls away, but love of the other is there. It's fulfilled already, and it doesn't require any action or any reciprocity or anything at all. Everything is perfect just as it is. And we are finally beyond the duality of love and hate, or love and rejection, or of good and bad, or good and evil, or any of the other projections that we make, the judgments we make on the world and blame for our lack of bliss. So we can be in that state of grace always at the cost of letting go of the identity with which we came into this world. Because we put on a clothing of ego identity the moment we came into, not into the world in our own body, but into the mother's body. We already come into her unconscious mind. And we're living in that for 9 months or so, maybe 6 months, because we don't come in at conception, but at the quickening, about 3 months later, the soul actually enters. And the unconscious mind of the mother then becomes the matrix. And then after birth, that is built upon in terms of relationship with the mother and the father. But there's an ego identity there that did not exist before the soul incarnated. And we must return to the unborn state of our mind. That's the Buddha mind. The mind that is unborn and therefore has no identification with a physical organism, with a gender, with any other kind of identification that then produces a desire and produces all kinds of rules and regulations and fears and anxieties that then cannot be controlled, because they come along with the territory of owning an ego and being owned by it. So that is the first loss of love. The ego itself becomes the double bind that holds us prisoner. And the mind thinks, well, if I get rid of the ego, I lose everything. Then I'm nothing. But if I have the ego, I know I'm never going to have what I want. It can't win either way. But it's because it's misunderstanding the nothingness that is prior to the ego as if it were a bad, barren emptiness that had no love, when in fact it is the emptiness of ego that is only love. It is the fullness of love. It's not a lack. But the ego, once you come into that identity, you're always in a state of lack. And once you come into language, the mind is always split. Your mind is never whole. You never see things as they really are, but always subject to unconscious projections and to drives that cannot be controlled because they hit you from behind, from underneath. And we can't even understand ourselves in order to make the change until we have disidentified. Many people think, well, first let me try to understand myself. And they go through years of therapy and they never do it. It's useless. Even if you have a good therapist who has some understanding, but within the ego, it's not understandable. You must extract your consciousness ultimately. The ego can be modified. There can be less suffering. There can be gaps so that the light shines through. But we have to then go through those gaps and reach the light. And from there, we have the power to dissolve the ego. But from within it, you are a character within the ego's movie. And that character has no power to reshoot the movie. So first we have to come out of it and realize we are nothing and no one. And then we have the power then to change the script, this rut that we have found ourselves repeating over and over again. And to realize that the satisfaction of everything we desire comes from the letting go of the desire. Because it's never an object out there. Not even God, because God is also a projection. The ultimate truth, ultimate reality, is beyond any concept of God or concept of Buddha mind or any other even atheistic concept. Even the idea of an external world is a myth. When all of that has been transcended, then we realize the bliss of what we have always been. And we see through the mirage that this phenomenal world is and recognize the sacredness of it, for its whole purpose was to lead us beyond that illusion to the dimension of truth and bliss and empowerment that enables us to then transform this world and not be victims of it, but be servants of God within it.